And welcome back to another exciting extra feature. Another time of a fabulous guest is film Harlow's Haunt. You can find it on Tubi, so it's free. So nobody can complain they can't find to watch it. I have the director Terry Jarrell here. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here. Harlow's is out there. I mean, Tubi, I mean, it's everywhere. Amazon, Voodoo, I guess that's Fandango now. And so, yeah, just, you know, blowing up everywhere. So that's cool. But, you know, we always love Tubi because, you know, it's free.
Free is good. At least this reviewer likes Tubi because I can watch things for free.
Yeah, I'm there too.
And the commercials really don't bug me. So let's start at the beginning. The writing process, I mean, you seem to go through different ideals as you go. It's not like a linear story or in any way. Kind of jumps a lot. Even in the middle, I would say it jumps from there to the end. It's a little
Yeah.
Even though we're solidly there for a while. So how does that work for you?
That's kind of, and stop me if we go, you know, like an hour. As a writer, especially for this story, it's come along over the years. It's not a short thing. And it was really hard. And I'll get back to this in a second. It was hard to define what I wanted to be of the story, because there were so many directions for Harlow's background, where he is going, what these other characters are faced with. So it's like, I in my mind, I see this huge universe of Harlow stuff and other people and other times and other just stuff. And so it was hard for me to kind of settle down and say, okay, I've got enough, you know, to slip or snip a little bit off to make a movie in the middle of this whole thing. So that was kind of the writing process as far as settling down on that. So, in the movie, as you've seen, it takes place in two timelines, in the 20s and current time. But they do kind of intersect, and going forward with the next films and other projects involved with it, you see a lot of, aha, that's what that means. That's where that person, why they're here. There's what happened. And especially at the end, it's been getting a lot of feedback from reviewers and fans and all for, they want an explanation. And it's like, well, it's there, but you either have to really think about it or maybe you just want to dig into that next level. Where are we going now? So there's a lot of questions, but there's a lot of answers there. And that's kind of an ambiguous answer. So there you go.
Is there another film coming then?
I'm working on it. Yeah.
Okay. So there's a part two.
Yeah. It's actually, and I'm just thrilled with the reception. We've got a fantastic distributor with Bayview, and they've really done a great job putting it out there. And, you know, we're in all these countries and things, and it's for our crazy little Florida movie. It's seeing a lot of eyes. So I'm very grateful for that. So yeah, I've got, if the stars aligned and all that, and, you know, the budget and all of that stuff, yeah, I could do, you know, several sequels or spinoffs. So it just depends on the next step. But one thing I meant earlier is I just started, because I have had a lot of people asking more about Harlow's backstory, and he's got a very gnarly backstory. So I'm putting that out as a podcast, and actually just this earlier this week launched the first two episodes. And this weekend, I'm going to have possibly two more. So I'm kind of, you know, getting caught up with that. And it's introducing new people to Harlow's Wars that haven't seen the movie yet, or others that want to learn more about what's going on. And it gets a lot darker. And as a writer, again, like, you know, I heard who Stephen King at some point was, I will screw up what he said, but the meaning was, you know, the darker monsters are in your mind. So if you, I love that ability to let the listener kind of build that environment or whatever based on the story. So I love story. So that's kind of my thing.
So will the podcast be taking away from the next film or adding to it? Or what is the purpose of the podcast?
It's going to kind of just expand where we're at now. And we're going to fill out that that whole Harlow's world, and we're going to see new characters. We're going to see explanations for some things. We're going to dive into things that haven't even been touched on yet. Again, taking things in different timelines. We're going to see things where even Harlow isn't even involved directly, because it's the story. Of course, Harlow is the core of the whole thing, but the story about the other characters is very interesting for me. So I want to get into some of these other characters, like in the movie. We've got Christina, and she is the girl that had the trouble. I mean, what, something's going on. Something happened.
What we're talking about.
Yeah. So she's had some stuff to deal with. And so we're going to get into stuff like that. Like what has happened or impacted these people, or you know, people that touch them. So there's a lot of density to the story there. And I wish I could have made the movie, you know, 20 hours, but some people said, no, you can't do that.
That would be a long watch, and we'd probably be doing this interview in about 2 months.
It would be tough.
Okay. I would finish it, but it would take me a while. Okay, let's get back to the film. You worked a little bit with CGI, the rain, the sky. Is that CGI altered?
No, that's I shot a lot. Actually, and I've just kind of been coming out with this because I am a, and we touched on it earlier, I'm a real tech fanatic. I want to try different things and just not doing the same thing you always see. And not anything's wrong with it, because you see, you know, filmmakers doing their own thing. But I like a really organic feeling about things. So I love a lot of motion. I want to see a lot of weird angles from the camera. I just want to, you know, really mix it up. So I shot the whole film with, I don't know if you're familiar of Insta360 gear. They make small micro cameras. Well, I've got a couple laying here. So if you can see something like that. Yeah, this thing can do some things you couldn't do on a big camera, like a Arri or something. Now, of course, people will say, yeah, but it's going to have, you know, different resolution and stuff. Yeah, but you know what? You can still do things here that you can't. So that's why I want to push the boundaries. I just really kind of wanted to have that a different feel with the different cameras and all that stuff. So I didn't use a lot of tech, if that makes any sense, because we shoot a lot of from a tech perspective, but we want to have that organic feel for everything else. So yeah, everything was pretty much practical, other than, you know, a few transitions and stuff like that. But
okay, the filming at night, I'm basically going to start the first scene.
Okay.
Did you film that differently than the end scene with a different camera lens, or is that all the same?
Yeah, no, it was both at night. The one at the opening shot with the girl, or the woman and the boy, that was really getting dark. It wasn't fully dark yet. And I wanted to, I mean, I was like running around like crazy. It's like, okay, now we have like 5 or 10 minutes to get this right, you know, thing. And then I'm editing, you know, you use a lot of color options and things like that. And I wanted to have that first part of the movie with Harlow in the cabin and all that stuff. I wanted to have a feel kind of like an old antique picture, because I'd seen that in, like, I don't know, in my grandmother's house when I was a kid or something. But it wasn't quite black and white, but it wasn't, you know, this or that. You know, just kind of had that really weird vibe to that thing. So that was a color palette that I just created to kind of give that, you know, antique feeling for that. And then when, you know, we go into the next thing with the music and all that, it's like, boom, it's like big, you know, sunny, you know, brights and all this, but it kind of setting the stage for everything getting darker from that point. So at night, and then I guess, you know, then we're at the haunt, and you've got, you know, the lights and stuff, but where it's dark. And so everything else was shot at night, and we shot from, well, sundown till, you know, 3, 4, 5 in the morning. So
I want to go back to the opening scene for a couple seconds. The look of Harlow.
Loving.
I want to know where, like, I don't know how to describe, people need to see the film to know what I'm really talking about, but how did you decide on his look?
Oh God. I'm going to control myself for a second. First of all, I absolutely love John Dugan. You know who he is, from Texas Chainsaw. He was Grandpa. He's an icon, and he's been a friend for forever. And I just love John. I'll go on all day about that. But when I was writing the script, when I settled on, you know, everything, and I was, you know, putting the touches, final touches, I knew that that was for John. I saw John in my mind. It's like, I've got to get John to do this. And he lives out of state and everything, but it's like, whatever it takes. I mean, if I have to go pick him up, I've got to do it. But he's not going to, you know, want to fool with me. I'm a goofball and blah, 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 and all this stuff. So we were talking, and I said, he was at a convention I was at, and we were hanging out. And I said, hey, you know, I've got this little project. I think you'd be perfect for it. He's like, well, let's talk. You know, next thing you know, he's like, sure, I'll do it. You come on down. You know, I'll come on down. And so it was like amazing. But John is what you see is John. I mean, he's got the hair, he's got the look, and he was Harlow. And aside from being an amazing actor, so we didn't have to do a lot of stretching, because we kind of had, you know, that we were just on the same page right off. And visually, you know, he you know, again, he has the hair and everything. It was like, John, I don't want to change a thing. I mean, let you a little costume and stuff here and there. And I said, I know where you're coming for building that character for the screen. And, you know, there you go. I mean, he's got some scenes that are just amazing, like where he has that laughter, where he kind of slow that. I mean, it's like another iconic shot. I mean, he's there, and then all of a sudden he has that look over that comes over his face. It's like, when I shot that, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I mean, it's to be in the room with him. And, you know, again, at like 2 a.m, it's, you know, 115 degrees and stuff. So, but, yeah.
Yeah. I just want to go over a few locations. The forest location. Is that from the old house, or is that the same place?
And that worked out really well. We shot the movie in basically two locations, in Kissimmee, Florida. It's right next to Disney.
I didn't know where it is.
Okay, well, it's actually in an attraction called Old Town, and that was all the new, what I call the new cast, the main cast, we'll say.
Right. I would say they're in the second half of the film, because you're the forest, you have a forest shot, and then you go into an old house.
Right. So what that is, I've got friends in close to between Orlando and Tampa. They have a haunted attraction called Sir Henry's. And it's one of the best in the country. I mean, it's amazing. And they're kind of, it's right off the interstate. I mean, the biggest, interstate in the state. But you can be, half a mile from there, and it feels like you're in the middle of the woods. I mean, they do an amazing job for all that. So I got talking to the owner. And I said, and it was in the middle of summer, or kind of the beginner of summer 2 years ago. And they were down for the season because they rebuild in the summer. So they've got everything, new stuff and all that. And I was like, hey, I'm looking for some sets because do you have anything, like rooms or what? And he was like, whatever you want. I mean, just use anything we've got. And it was like, they were amazingly gracious, patient, and they loved being part of the project. So yeah. The house was an attraction. I mean, it was a maze. So, I did, we did dressing and things like that, but it had that old cabin thing. And I had been looking everywhere to find the right thing. And you would think around kind of where I live is kind of in the middle of the Disney and then the country. It's like, right there. So I thought, there'll be a million of these cabins. Huh, you can't find them. But I found the haunt at Sir Henry's, and it just worked perfectly. So actually, everything we shot there, whether it looks like it was in the forest, was at one maze of the haunt, and then the other, you see in the film, you see the people, out in the courtyard and all that, and then the main stuff near the end, that's all in a maze, as you can tell. And so, yeah, it was great to kind of have these things fleshed out that we could go in and just fine tune what we needed. So,
okay, now we go from there to the next big location is Old Town.
Yes.
Now it's the beginning shot when we go to color. Is that Old Town still where the R is and everything?
That actually is not in Old Town, but it's close. And that was actually the music for that. A friend, Corey Britz, he's the bass player for Bush, the band Bush. So Corey, has some of his own records, and I got, talking with him. I said, hey, this one, the Violent Circus, I said, man, are you like reading my mind? Because I need this kind of a song for this thing, and here's what I'm doing with it. So we worked it out. And so that worked well, but it gave that like segue between the current and the past. It's like there's some stuff going on, especially with her. And then everything picks up at Old Town. So other than that one scene with her, kind of pondering whether should she, because she's reuniting with her friends, and she's wondering if she should or not, because they've had a tragedy, they've got a lot of crap going on, and she's about ready to bail on it. She's not sure if she's up for it, but she pushes herself through it, and it turns out, but. But yeah, that's kind of where that scene comes from.
Now, all the Old Town footage, is that guerrilla shooting, or do you have a permit for that?
No, we did it all on location so that we had permit there. So
okay. Now, it's the, I don't know where you get it. The end scene, so I describe it, is that back to the original place, or is that in Old Town?
No, that's all the ending where she runs out.
Yes.
And, okay, no, that's at the haunt. That's Sir Henry.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. Yeah,
okay. That's... Since you've told me, I'm like, okay, that makes sense now where that was. I was trying to figure out, this is a pretty cool attraction for this place.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. That's actually the first scene we shot. Well, not this exact scene, but we shot that the first night of the shot.
I think if you did that, you eliminate a lot of your problems, right? Then maybe that's what should be my next question. Because, I mean, then you can eliminate a lot of the actors.
It kind of does. We had, that first weekend was just chaos. So I thought, let's start big. Let's just, let's go crazy. And let's not, and my big thing is, I don't want things to be really as, you have to, be scripted. You have to have, direction, but I like things to be, again, I said earlier, organic. I want to have some bumps and warps. So, every word doesn't have to be right, because I want it to be more authentic. So, we had about 60-ish extras. And so everybody, we had a 2-day pista party. It was just, people hanging out. It was hot, and it was just a big party. Everybody had fun. And, I've still got so much, footage that I wish I could use somewhere, but you can only, make the scenes ever so big. And, it was a good way to start off. And then again, what you said, it kind of eliminates some questions, because then you go back and say, okay, this worked, that didn't work, some key things that we need to reshoot, like the scene where all the people the group gets together at the haunt after they kind of, these two go this direction, and then you re-meet. We had to reshoot that, and it was good, but we were going out to do some other shots out there, and I thought, hey, while we're here, let's just go ahead and roll this. And they actually, it just worked. I mean, they you had, I guess, a new breath from looking at it again. So.
Okay, I don't want to forget the music, so why don't we start there, because we keep bringing it up. How did you choose your music?
The music is all from Carlo Crespo, a guy from Miami. Great guy. I mean, I'll let anybody know, if anybody is doing indie work, he's an amazing musician. He has just so much experience. Different, instruments. I mean, we have been talking for probably a year before getting really close to filming. And so, he would just send me, examples like, okay, are we thinking about this or that? I kind of settled on that, that retro vibe, because I'm old. So background is that it's like that, '70s, '80s, kind of that. Just stuff you don't see that often anymore, and you kind of, you have that aha thing. It's like whether it's just a feeling or something like that. So I think Carlos did a great job for finding the way to kind of weave all that texture in the music. So it's all Carlos, except for Corey's song.
Okay. There is a shot I want to discuss. There's a woman sitting on a ledge.
Yes.
Okay. Is that a drone shot? Are you higher than her on a ladder? I could not figure it out.
See, I love that. Actually, there's another shot. I'll tell you about that. Okay. That's Christina. That's Brill, big bagpot. She, I am a drone guy, actually. So I used to, I've been doing a lot of drone stuff on film for forever. But getting back to the Insta360 shots, the cameras they've got now will, you don't need a drone for a lot of things. Unless it's got to be, you know, obviously high, but you know, I'm getting to the point, I won't even pull out a drone anymore. Cause if you have something for, you know, 15 feet high or whatever, I'm not going to pull out a drone because I can get a shot faster, easier, safer. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And so that shot I shot with a, basically, I just scared my dog. I don't know if you can see it. It's like a stick. And so this is a 3 meter stick, and I can put, you know, anywhere I want. So, and I can really control everything just like I would with a drone, and shooting in, you know, a 4K or whatever. And even my one camera goes to 8K. So it's nice to be able to put that wherever you want. You can run it through a car, you can put it anywhere. So there's another shot, same camera. If you remember, where she shows up at the haunt with her boyfriend in the Mustang, the red Mustang, and it has a crane shot that comes down right. Yes. Same thing. Same stick, same, a different camera, basically a camera, just a newer version. And so she just, I directed her to come, you know, this path, just come right to me. Just don't hit me. That's the only question. And just watch. I put a dot that she could see on the camera. I said, just line up that camera on the windshield when you come in. And that's how we got that shot.
Yeah, I do want to discuss that red Mustang. I'm sure you get asked about it a lot. Whose car is that? Beautiful.
It's mine's in the garage right now.
Oh, sweet. I just love that car. Like, that is pretty nice.
Thanks. Yeah, that's my toy. I just never take it out much. I should, but I just, you know, it's more you have a Mustang.
At times your script feels ad-libbed. Maybe that's just the way you write, or you just said, I need you generally to discuss these things. So which one is it?
Exactly. Well, exactly. Either one. No, it, of course it was scripted, but I want, again, that organic. I'll go back to the cabin, the really long scenes with the woman and Harlow sitting in at the table and talking their background. That's a ton of dialogue. And I'd had a lot of, discussions with both of them, and they were both getting, you know, concerned about, you know, the density of this dialogue, and I just had to assure them, don't get hung up with a phrase or a word or whatever. You know what this character has went through, and just find it in yourself to tell your story. If you have just been, you know, on the run or whatever the situation is, what if you had to sit down in a stranger's cabin and you just have to let it out? Could you do that? And so we ran through it, and, you know, we had rehearsals and that stuff. And then finally, you know, we were shooting, and it was like, okay, we're going to do this. I'm not a big, you know, 50 takes kind of guy. We're going to do it in two. I think you can do it. I'm not pushing you. It's in you. And I just like to transfer that power to the actor rather than them trying to, you know, act for the me or for the director or whatever. Let it come from you, and it will. And we did two takes. And if you notice that there's not a lot of cuts. I just really put a couple cuts in there to give some transition for the visuals. But that's almost a 7-minute take, and they nailed it. It was Amy, my DP, was she had tears when we called cut, and the power in a performance like that, it's hard to get that even to go through the screen now, but for the people and John, his emotions, that you know what's going on with that guy, and what she's trying to just, you know, let the world come off her shoulders. It was an amazing thing to see those two do. It was wonderful, really, to see them do that, and then to feel they felt so empowered or proud of their performances. And I don't give them any, I don't take any credit. I mean, it was them. I just gave them the space to act and be the characters.
So it was Old Town, and the was always in the cards, like to have the black and white shot to start, the fade into color, then sort of, you could argue, almost repeated yourself at the end, even though it's got nothing to do with the beginning. Like, at least we don't know yet if it does. I'm sure it does.
Yeah.
I'm not going to press you on that. And you kind of like fade to black again. Could you kind of bring the beginning back to the end? Was that always the plan?
Yeah, it was. It was, you know, visually, there was a distinction between the timelines. And, you know, I wanted to have that feel as much different between the two timelines as I could. It was easier with the current timeline because of, well, you know, it was easy with the costumes and everything. And you know, even using the location at Sir Henry's, because it was written about the haunt, you know, and there's even some lines there. You know, if anybody has been to some of the name brand, that might be a good way, attractions around here. Because I've been a big fan for Universal for years. I mean, I've went to horror nights for years. It's changed a lot. And that was actually, it is factored into the story. I mean, some lines there about, well, why are we going here in case mm-hmm. instead of that? The lines, the expense and all, you know, it was the motivation to try something different. And that's, you know, what, that's where they land at Harlow's Haunt. Where were we? I was just meandering here with the story.
Oh, I just asked you, was the beginning of the film and the end of the film supposed to be kind of black and white and tie in together?
Not really. It's almost a linear part of the whole story. It's like it starts at this point and it ends with this one, but then going to the next story. And, you know, hopefully we do maybe a third or fourth or whatever that will patent on the podcast story. Some it's resolving some things about, again, Harlow and so that kind of, when you look at the movie and you start to understand more of the universe around, it's going to be, ah, okay, now I get why Harlow did this or is this way or whatever. And at the end, we've, you know, got the it ends as it does, you know, without that, the last ending, if we want to call that. You saw that, so yeah, but we'll talk with the, you know, the big ending. Yeah, that does not necessarily end there either. So there's more from that, those characters, and what has happened. You know, this may have happened, or maybe that may have happened. So there was a duality going on that, from perspective, can be the same thing, but different people, or, you know, or four different people.
Was the plan always to have the podcast at the end?
Kinda, yeah. It was going to be a shorter little thing, and the Indy Brigade, been good friends for years. Actually, George Romero had that before, and it was called the Indy Brigade. And I had a host or a show that I hosted there for the Drone Cav. So I worked with filmmakers about using drones, small cameras, and you know, tech and software and all that stuff. So Joe Ridgely has been a huge supporter. CJ and the scene. They've been really great supporters, and Joe even came on set a couple times and all that. So we kind of had this this, hey, why don't we do this idea? It's like, because I'm kind of wanting, it was actually, I was thinking to use it for like a credit roll at the end. And then the more we talked about it, and you know, I can't let anything go. It's like, well, if it's going to be this good, let's make it a little better and a little bigger. Yeah. 6 hours long again. So, then Amy was involved, and I said, let's just kind of do like an epilogue, like what happened. And then I said, let's just kind of, you know, cause we had a lot of weird stuff, you know, if whether it is or not. But we had all this weird stuff that happened on set, and you know, I said, well, let's just kind of have this, you know, thing of some moments. So let's just talk about what ifs. And we just ad-libbed that whole thing, and it just lit up. So I think that went about, I don't know, 7-8 minutes.
You're about right. Yeah, that's it.
And
so when they're doing that, I'm going to get into this a bit more. They hadn't seen the movie yet then, right?
Oh, yeah. Amy had.
No, the host.
On the show?
Yes.
I don't think they had seen all of it. They'd probably seen some of it, but
could they come across like they did watch it?
Yeah, I think Joe probably had seen a pretty close edit, but CJ, I think he was about 50-50.
Okay. Where do I want to go? I got a few things left. Who's in the band?
The band, that is a local band. I'm not sure if they're, I don't think they're still around, actually. It was called the Propel that you saw in the haunt when they first walked
yes,
in.
Yes, that's what I'm talking.
That surfer horror thing. I loved it. They were just some locals that I somehow, you know, met these people online and they told me they had a band, and oh yeah, I met them casting for the extras, and they saw a posting, and so they happened to mention that they have a band. I said, well, you know, I have a place if you can guys, you know, bring some, you know, guitars or something, and you know, just get a few shots and stuff. No, they come all their stuff, and they played all night. Yeah. It was awesome. Everybody, you know, that, which was good because if you've never been, and you probably have, but the people, anyone that's ever been on set, it's a lot of standing around.
Yes.
A lot of ain't nothing happening. Well, there's stuff happening, but, you know, it's boring unless you're involved. And so, you know, these guys, they played all night. So it was awesome having them. So they were great. The other stuff is just, for Carlos, which he was in his studio in Miami doing all the scoring, and then Corey in his own studio. So he's out of state, too. So that's it for me.
I know you're going to help me, so I'm going to try to beat around the bush a bit. So I'm at the end of the film. There's a woman that's kind of tied up with an item. Is it real or not real?
Which one are you? Oh, Well, there's a couple things I'm thinking you're referring to.
Well, you'd okay. I'll say it outright then. The chain, is it real or not real? I could not figure it out. It looked real to me.
I wish I should. I usually had a piece of it hanging up here. No, it's prop chain. It's
so hard to tell because I mean you're definitely giving me no lighting to help me on this scene, and I'm like I like it. But I'm like, what is going on? Because, I mean, obviously you have seen the film to know why I'm a little lost, but you would know if you saw the film. Okay.
Yeah.
You definitely add sound effects, I would say, around here.
Some, yeah. I like to keep that stuff minimal. But, you know, there was some, you know, there's some hits and stuff like that that have to be, you know, added to just... you punch the sound or whatever on a certain thing, but there's it's kind of minimal. I there's so much that you can do, and again, I've been doing editing for years as an Apple consultant and trainer, and one of the first things in graphics and design and things like that I would constantly preach is, just because you can do a drop shadow doesn't mean you need to do a drop shadow. So, yeah, I think I carry that everywhere, you know, sound or anything.
Okay. Last question about the film casting. I mean, obviously we know you already knew who Harlow was going to be.
Yes.
You decided who your main female was at this point.
I did. Back to Brielle. I've known Brielle since she was a little girl. I know her parents, and we've got a lot of mutual friends and things like that. When I was writing the story, I had this character, and that she just kind of fit because her experience. She's been in theater her whole life. She is an actor at Universal now. She's a stilt walker, and so she's like one of the big. No pun intended. One of the big, tall girls. But she does, she's very athletic. So that takes a lot of, work. I mean, obviously balance and that kind of stuff. And dealing with, like, the crowds and things like that. So she's, and plus she's an actor and all that for other roles that they have there. So, but yeah, that's kind of her, she loves it. That's kind of her thing now. So she's, between Universal, Disney, other, promotions and things like that. She's getting out there. So she's awesome. So she really fit that character. And I adjusted a little, to fit the character once I decided on her and, her schedule worked and all that stuff. All the other characters, basically everyone else is local from Florida, mostly Tampa to Orlando. There's a really thriving film community here in Florida, believe it or not, because we have zero support from the state. There is no film commission or anything. Andes or anybody here. You're on your own. There's no support from the state. So, yay. So, these people are, they don't have to do this. And unfortunately, a lot of people are going out of state or, moving, out of state to take their careers elsewhere. But yeah, there's, it's like anything. You've got, good and, not so good here and there, but you've got a good, community here, especially in Orlando, for there's a couple. I don't know if you call it companies or just groups that support indies, and they have like several. I think call them a challenges through the year. They'll have like a thriller or a horror or a And that's really blown up, which is really good. And I have a lot of contacts, and I just know a lot of people involved with it. And there's a lot of good talent. I had a lot of people. I didn't even really do much of a cast call, but you know, feelers out there. But yeah, just found really good people to kind of fit the roles. So Amy, my DP, Amy Rolfin, she was one of the main actors. Dylan, the guy with the big hair, it looks like a younger John.
He does.
Yeah, everybody was just so good. Christine that played Amber.
Yeah. Amber. So don't screw me up.
Yeah, I need to watch this movie. And Jonathan that played Aiden. They just kind of have enough experience doing indies around here or stage work and stuff around here. So it was a good mix. Like Brielle, for example, her experience is more stage. And you can put her, you know, because you've got that different, you know, reach for as an actor on the stage versus on camera. And it is kind of fun to work with them, a group like that on set, because it's like, okay, here's where we're going with this scene and blah, 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 blah. And to see where they interpret the scene. And, we have to, adjust here and there, but otherwise, it's fun stuff. And again, it's that organic thing to see they're creating at that moment. So,
okay, now we're off to fun questions. So get ready. First time on the show, I need your favorite film.
Psycho.
That was an easy one.
That's easy.
Your favorite creature?
Creature. I'm like all Hitchcock, because you can't say like Dorman being a creature.
Nope.
There's so many. Because I have friends involved. I'll say Freddy Krueger.
And your favorite food found at an amusement park?
And sorry, I kind of dropped out.
Your favorite food found at an amusement park?
These horrible hot dogs they have in Universal. They're like, they're nasty, they're dirty, and, you know, but, you know, you got to have one.
Okay, everyone. His film was on Tubi and everywhere else, but he didn't tell a story to find the Harlow Haunt shirt he's wearing. So I'll let him tell you.
Actually, can you see?
I can see it.
We have some of these. This is actually an original. And we have some of these that have, because the movie, shut me up, the movie has hit 100 awards. So we're stoked with between awards, selections, blah, 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 all that stuff. So we had a shirt done that had, I think, like 12 or whatever at the time. And we were like, oh, we're losing our mind. And now it's like, you know, you'd have to make a coat out of it. So, but we still have those. And it's on the website, blackdogfilms.com. And there's an order there. Another thing we have that's kind of dwindling, and we'll only have these Blu-rays, autographed. Now, there you can buy the Blu-ray on, you know, Amazon and all other. I mean, it's on so many stores to buy it and things like that, but not autographed. So I had a box or couple boxes, we'll say, to autograph on at conventions and things like that. So I've got a little bit more of those. So there, I think I put those back on the website too. It's like $25 autographed, and you know, if it's worth $1 billion, you know, one of these days, yay. But at least for now, you get a Blu-ray. So anyway, so we have that stuff.
Thanks for your time and have a great evening.
Thank you.